This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko said he'll propose Parliament declare martial law after Russia attacked and seized three Ukrainian Navy ships in the Black Sea. He said martial law will allow the country to strengthen its defenses, but will also try to liberate Ukrainian territory by political and diplomatic means. The vessels were seized off the coast of Crimea after Russia opened fire, wounding at least two sailors. Moscow insists the vessels illegally entered its territorial waters and ignored warnings to stop. Ukraine's head of National Security and Defense Council, Oleksandr Turchynov, described the Russian action as an act of military aggression. Kyiv denies Russian charges. Tensions are high after Russia's Crimea annexation in 2014 and its backing of an insurgency in eastern Ukraine. Robert Manning, senior security analyst at the Atlantic Council, said it certainly increases tensions.
It's clearly an escalation. The fighting in Ukraine has sort of fallen off the front pages, and I don't know that we're any closer to a resolution.
The European Union called on Russia to restore freedom of passage in the Kerch Strait and appealed for restraint on both sides. The UN Security Council is expected to take the matter up Monday. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu met Sunday with visiting Chadian President Idriss Deby.
But it is a fact that you, as a leader of an African country, an important African country, the majority of whose population is Muslim, is coming to Israel to renew our friendship and our relationship, I think is a testament of what is going to happen with other such countries in Africa as well.
Mr. Deby's visit is the first to the Jewish state by a Central African leader. He said his visit could facilitate the turning of a new page in bilateral ties. This is VOA News. The U.S. closed its busiest border crossing with Mexico for several hours Sunday after part of a large caravan of migrants from Central America attempted to cross the border at San Ysidro between San Diego in the U.S. and Tijuana in Mexico. Mexican police scattered migrants attempting to rush the U.S. border. U.S. Customs and Border Police turned them back with a volley of gas canisters. Rice University LATAM analyst Mark Jones said closing the border crossing is unusual but not surprising, given the political nature of the immigration issue on both sides of the border.
It also reflects, I think, growing frustration among both the migrants, but also among many on the U.S. side and in Mexico about the state of the situation. It's going to probably also lead to a need by the Mexican government to react, because now with the closing of the San Ysidro crossing, groups that are going to suffer the most are going to be Mexicans residing in Tijuana.
Thousands of migrants set out from Honduras 5 weeks ago seeking asylum in the U.S. They have in recent days camped out at a sports stadium in Tijuana. The U.S. and Mexico are seeking to negotiate a plan whereby the migrants remain in Mexico until their asylum requests can be heard in court. European Union leaders formally endorsed Britain's divorce, known as Brexit Sunday. Jean-Claude Juncker is the EU Commission president.
Good deal, sad deal, not the deal itself, but the Brexit is a sad moment for the European Union. And I want to say for Britain too, future history will prove this.
He called the agreement the best deal possible, but it must also be approved by a skeptical British Parliament. Britain is expected to formally leave the EU March 29, with or without an agreement on future relations with the EU. More than 100 people were treated following a suspected toxic gas attack Saturday in the northern Syrian city of Aleppo, which Damascus and Russia blamed on insurgents. Russia said its warplanes attacked suspected militants in Idlib province. Rebels insist they have no chemical weapons. The claims an airstrike broke a two-month reprieve from violence since Russia and Turkey struck a truce agreement in mid-September. Iran is reporting no fatalities but hundreds of injuries following a 6.3 magnitude earthquake that struck the western province of Kermanshah late Sunday. Minor damage is reported. Local officials in central Yemen suspect that at least five al-Qaeda militants were killed in a U.S. drone strike in al-Bayda province, including a local commander. An unmanned U.S. spacecraft is nearing the end of its six-month voyage to study the deep interior of Mars. The InSight, having traveled nearly 550 million kilometers, is expected to touch down about 20 hours Universal Time Monday. It represents NASA's first attempt at a Martian landing in 6 years. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Monday, November 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The U.S. Embassy in Kinshasa says it will close today due to alleged terror threat, but the government says DRC is not a terrorist country.
According to the announcement, the Congolese authorities put military and police to reinforce the security of the embassy. But I can ensure that everyone is very surprised because we are not currently a terrorist country.
Andre Alain Atundu is the spokesman for the ruling coalition in the DRC. The managing director of Liberia's Housing Authority and his deputy are barred from leaving the country pending the conclusion of any alleged corruption investigation. And 31 people are dead in Uganda and many still missing after an overcrowded boat capsized on Lake Victoria.
There is, just like in many other areas in our country, a very gross failure of the state in regulating and managing transportation on the lakes.
Dr. Chisa Besigye is former leader of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change. Burundi arrests 4 army officials for their role in the assassination of a president. And we'll tell you why the meeting between Zambia's president and an opposition leader is being criticized. And helping West Africa achieve 100% access to energy by 2030. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The U.S. Embassy in Kinshasa says it will close to the public today, Monday, because the embassy says it received credible and specific information of a possible terrorist threat against U.S. government facilities in Kinshasa. The embassy also advises U.S. citizens in the Congolese capital and throughout the country to maintain a heightened level of vigilance. The DRC is in a campaign mode for its presidential election next month. The embassy also warned of potential unrest in the weeks leading up to the December 23rd election. But the DRC government says the embassy claims are surprising, since the DRC has never been a terrorist country. Andre Alain Atundu is the spokesman for President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition.
Everyone in Kinshasa was surprised by this announcement of the U.S. embassy. Currently, we don't see what kind of risk of terrorist action can be took against the embassy. So, according to the announcement, the Congolese authorities put military and police to reinforce the security of the embassy. But I can ensure that everyone is very surprised because we are not currently a terrorist country.
The embassy also warned of a possible potential unrest in the weeks leading up to the December 23rd election, saying that this unrest could take place on short notice.
Everyone here, the opinion I can say, the current citizen is surprised. But I think our intelligence service with the embassy know that the IDF, I think, they often threaten to take an action against U.S. interests in Kinshasa. And probably they had some evidence that the past impact is defined. But honestly, the current opinion of Congolese people in Kinshasa is that this announcement is not true. It means that Americans are preparing a coup against the power in Congo. This is the current opinion, but I have no evidence of the terrorist act.
Why would the United States want to stage a coup in Democratic Republic of Congo?
No, I don't know. I say the current opinion, because currently we have not recorded any terrorist action in Kinshasa. So for the first time, this announced from American embassy is seen as just a coup prepared by embassy of the United States. That means that we have no evidence of the preparation.
But the embassy also said there's a potential for unrest to take place before the election.
No risk of potential arrest. All the candidates are now in campaign. Today, a lot of them were in Martin Stadium to attend the mass of the new Archbishop of Kinshasa. And there's no fear of violence.
Why is there a public opinion that perhaps the U.S. could be preparing a coup d'etat against the power?
I tell you what I heard. They say it isn't possible. We never recorded a terrorist act against the embassy. Why just now during the presidential campaign? Why? I don't know. I tell you what I heard from the people of Kinshasa.
Andre Alain Atundu is the spokesman for DRC President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. 31 people are dead in Uganda and many still missing after an overcrowded boat capsized on Saturday on Lake Victoria, about 31 miles south of the capital, Kampala. President Yoweri Museveni said the boat, which had the capacity for 50 people, was carrying about 120 passengers. He has vowed that the operators of the boat will be charged with criminal negligence and manslaughter. But one report says the owner of the boat and his wife are among the dead. Boat accidents on Uganda's lakes are common. Dr. Chisa Besigye, former leader of Uganda's main opposition Forum for Democratic Change, says Saturday's tragedy is the result of the lack of regulation of Uganda's water transport.
It was indeed a very tragic event that happened Saturday evening. The information available is that this boat had more than 100 passengers on board. This was a leisure travel arrangement of some friends who were partying and going out from somewhere near Kampala to an island that was not far off from the mainland. Now, what is, I think, most annoying is that many of the people on this boat did not have life vests on them, and I think there weren't enough vests on board. Secondly, it is clearly apparent that the boat was overloaded. There have been very many accidents in the Lake Victoria, but also on the several other lakes that are in our country, Lake Albert, Lake Kyoga, Lake Edward, and others. And it is very clear that there is no regulation on the vessels that ply on these lakes. So there is, just like in many other areas in our country, a very gross failure of the state in regulating and managing transportation on the lakes.
But Dr. Besigye, President Museveni issued a statement on Sunday saying that his government has ordered the electronic registration and monitoring of all boats so that they can know who is where and on which lake.
I haven't heard his statement. I don't know whether his statement indicated when that order was made and whether it is reduced into a legal framework, whether there is a law regulating transportation on these lakes that spells out those rules. And certainly if they are there at all, which I highly doubt, they are not enforced or they are observed by total disregard. And as I have said, almost daily there are very fatal accidents on all the lakes that we have in this country. And certainly that is the more critical thing. Whether there is regulation or not, it means that they are totally ineffective.
Dr. Besigye, a very sad situation, but we are happy to have you to give us the update. Thank you very much.
Very sad indeed, and my thoughts and prayers are with the families of the victims and all their relatives and friends.
Dr. Chisa Besigye is the former leader of Uganda's main opposition Forum for Democratic Change. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 26. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. The managing director of Liberia's Housing Authority and his deputy are barred from leaving the country pending the conclusion of an alleged corruption investigation. A Justice Ministry press release says Doana Soyun and Tugbe Tugbe are allegedly heard on a purported audio recording published by a front page Africa newspaper discussing the solicitation of bribe to perform their official duties. Moses Carter is the spokesman of the Liberian National Police.
Well, I can confirm to you, Moses, that the National Housing Authority Managing Director, has been invited by the Liberian National Police to answer to reports of alleged bribery, as was reported by the Front Page Africa newspaper. And so it's in this week that we've thought to invite him to provide information on the report as published.
What exactly is that information? What does it say that the police is dwelling on?
The Front Page Africa had reported information that the National Housing Authority boss confirmed in a recording, secret recording, which is perhaps can be admissible or non-admissible in court, that there was some amount of money contributed to the National Housing Authority, and of that money, some higher-ups in government were requesting for some amount as a way of certifying agreement. And so it's with this that the Liberian National Police chose to invite the National Housing Authority boss to provide clarity on the matter.
How serious and thorough is this questioning going to be?
It is going to be very serious and thorough. I can assure you that, Moses. Because, you see, one of the things that will lead to the international community working with the government of Liberia is on the basis of transparency and accountability. And so, based on that, we think as a police force that is supposed to ensure the enforcement of the rule of law, people who are said to be treading contrary to the law should be made to answer to issues that will allay some of the misconceptions in the public. And if such investigation is not conducted, it will mean to the world such report from the Front Page Africa is something real. And so our interest is to make sure that we establish whether the report from Front Page Africa is real or it's not real.
You say it's going to be robust. Is the police hoping to invite more people?
Based on probable causes, based on information that we will receive from the NHA bus, we'll certainly invite other persons.
Moses Carter is the spokesman of the Liberian National Police. He spoke with reporter Moses Gaziewu in the capital, Monrovia. Burundian authorities have arrested four army officials for their role in the assassination of former President Mikhail Ndadaye, who was killed in 1993 after a military coup that led to a decade-long ethnic violence during which more than 100,000 people lost their lives. Moses Avyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
It was Saturday morning when security forces cordoned off the homes of the four retired army officials. The four, one a retired army general and three colonels, were taken to the country's Supreme Court. Sylvester Nyandwi is Burundi's attorney general.
Some high rank officers who have been arrested, they are accused to have been involved in a 1993 coup, in which the first president democratically elected, Mikhail Ndadaye, was assassinated with other officials.
Ndadaye, Burundi's first democratically elected president, was assassinated in 1993 in the capital, Bujumbura, after just 3 months in the office. The assassination sparked an ethnic violence that developed into a decade-long Burundi civil war that led to the killing of more than 100,000 people. Sylvester Ntibantunganya is the former Burundi president and was a minister in Melchior Ndadaye's government.
Burundi was in a political system were not opened. And before elections, it was necessary to organize a transitional period. And I think that it is the main reason which conducted to the assassination of President Ndadaye by some actors from the army of Burundi who was not prepared for democracy.
According to the United Nations investigation about the murder released in 1996, Ndadaye's army command was accused of being responsible for the assassination. Burundi Attorney General Sylvester Nyandwi explained why the arrest happened after 25 years.
So we took our time to gather evidences, and the case is still pending in the Supreme Court. We are doing this in order to fight against the impunity in our country, because so many offenses have been committed in the impunity without being punished.
As the four accused veterans were remanded on Saturday afternoon, Burundi's Attorney General indicated that more arrests will be made in the coming days and warrants issued to even those who fled the country. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
The leader of Zambia's opposition Republican Progressive Party has criticized the recent meeting between President Edgar Lungu and main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema of the United Party for National Development, UPND. James Lukuku says Hichilema betrayed supporters who lost their lives due to politically related violence. The meeting between the two men cleared the way for a much-anticipated national dialogue on electoral reform, political tension, and violence. James Lukuku explained to viewers Peter Clotty why his party rejected the meeting.
We are very much concerned with the fact that the dialogue should take place. In the first place, we lost it when we could not allow the involvement of the Commonwealth representative, that is the Nigerian Professor Gambari, to be at the front of the national dialogue process. Because in as much as we believe in ourselves as Zambians, and this being an internal matter which we can preside over, the fact is that an international organization like the Commonwealth was better placed, because that Commonwealth was with powers that could actually sanction this nation if we did not go about the agreements or the solutions that you can put through in the national dialogue.
So why is your party opposed to a meeting that paves the way for this national dialogue to happen? Why are you opposed to it?
The reason why we don't agree with the step that has been taken by having President HH and President Edgar Lungu meet is for us to show to it that this national dialogue is not something that must be centered on the patriotic front. It's not a dialogue for HH and it's not a dialogue for Edgar Lungu. Because if that was the case, then the best that must have been done was to put it to political parties, and then we don't call it as a national dialogue. It could have been called the UPND Patriotic Front Dialogue.
James Lukuku is leader of Zambia's opposition Republican Progressive Party. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka, a regional body dedicated to achieving 100% access to energy by 2030 in all of West Africa, is trying to achieve its goal through multiple approaches. One of these is helping private sector business owners launch businesses that provide off-grid renewable energy sources, such as solar panels. Yuri Handam, who is in charge of the project, talked to Ricky Strike about their plans for 2019.
So we're looking at supporting the governments, the policies and regulation. We look at it and see how favorable they are for this type of standalone systems. And we also have a huge amount of work that we do for the entrepreneurs, going from training the entrepreneurs, capacity building on their financial, how they manage their business. And on the first and second one, we are looking into providing some grants, because the financial component, which is component two of project, which is some financial support for the private sector, which doesn't go through ECRE, it's going to go through a development bank, who then will distribute that through the commercial banks or microfinance institutions down to the private sector.
Are you finding an increasing interest from local populations in certain countries, people who want to invest in this, people who want to start standalone systems?
Yeah. Yes, it's definitely very diversified if you go from one country to the other. So, for example, Senegal has been doing great for the past 2 years. There's three or four companies that bought businesses.
Locally owned companies?
Local registered companies, but often they have some support from outside. What we're trying to do is with the tier ones, which are mostly local, and they usually have the hardest.
They don't have access to credit.
Exactly. They have more difficulty in having access to credit. So that's why we are trying to get additional funds for the project, so that we have a grant component for those that have feasible projects, but because of their very recent history, they cannot have access to credit. So we'll provide those grants to kind of boost them in the right direction. So, but there's a huge difference between the different countries. There's countries that are completely virgin, let's say, like that. They have not done anything, and they don't know the technology itself, so there's a lot more work to be done.
That was Yuri Handam, the technical coordinator for the Regional Off-Grid Electricity Project. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. Minutes past the hour, time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the ongoing 2019 Women's African Cup of Nations currently holding in Ghana. Holders Nigeria and South Africa have joined Mali and Cameroon at the semi-finals of the competition after the completion of the group stage on Saturday. South Africa, who beat Nigeria and Equatorial Guinea in their first two Group B games, needed just a draw to progress, and they did just that against neighbors Zambia. South Africa, who beat Nigeria and Equatorial Guinea in their first two Group B games, needed just a draw to progress, and they did just that against neighbors Zambia, with both teams settling for a 1-1 draw in the Group B ultimate clash at the Accra Sports Stadium. Nigeria, on the other hand, accounted for Equatorial Guinea's 6-0 loss in Cape Coast to seal the second spot and join the South Africans at the last four. Thomas Denaby is the Super Falcons coach.
But of course, we are very, very happy to be in the same final. And we reach our first goal. Now the next goal is to secure a ticket to France next year.
Head coach of Bayana Bayana, Desiree Ellis, says she was not impressed with the performance of her team against the Chipolopolo of Zambia, and that they will have to do better against Mali in the semi-finals.
If you can not play well and still grind out a result, it's also important because it shows that we can grind out a result. But, rather now than, especially in the semi-finals, we know it's a do-or-die match. It's our final. We've really got to be at our best. It's going to take a performance like the Nigeria type of performance to get the result and realize our ultimate goal of going to the World Cup.
For the semi-finals, Cameroon will face Nigeria in a repeat of the 2016 final in Accra, while South Africa will battle Mali in Cape Coast, both on Tuesday. And now to rugby news. Coach of South Africa's national rugby side, the Springboks, Rassie Erasmus, has praised Wales for their 2011 victory over the Springboks in Cardiff on Saturday. Coach Erasmus said afterwards that the Welsh were the better team, and he offered no excuses after the Springboks' disappointing end to the international season.
This game, I just felt the Welsh were better than us, and tactically, and this outsmarted us, so I take that on the chin. Our problem is consistency.
In basketball news, Mozambican side Ferroviário de Maputo claimed their first ever FIBA Africa Women's Championship Cup title after beating five-time winners Interclube 59-56 in Sunday's final in the Mozambican capital city of Maputo. Earlier in the day, Nigerian champions First Bank Basketball secured the last spot on the podium after dismantling Vita Club from DR Congo 93-69 in the third place game. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, November 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barton in Washington, hoping that you will have a productive week.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.